Hello, my fur brothers and fur sisters. How you doing? So how you been? Everything going good? You been doing the right thing? Now, I don't know what your right thing is, but you know what it is. Have you been doing it? If you have, congratulations. If not, don't be a wussy about it. Do the right thing. Whatever that is in your life, go ahead and do it. Welcome to Trapping Radio. We're going to be talking about a couple different subjects today. Before we do, I want to get some stuff out of the way. Just let you know what's going on in my part of the world. This is going to lead into a show for next week, what we're getting ready to talk about. On our business course, I've had several people over the last year and a half like wanting to have, I guess you would say something like a preview, or be able to want to see some of the course stuff or something like that. And there was a question that came up on the business course where we're talking about cash flow, because it's one of the most important things within a business, and it's one of the biggest reasons businesses go out of business, even though they sell stuff for more than they have in it. And a lot of it has to do with definitions. A lot of it has understanding the difference between a sale and a whole business and different things like that. Well, we did a module on this on the business course, and there were some questions on it. So I was going to go in much deeper detail on that. And I thought, and I'm kind of asking y'all to have understanding on this, because to some of y'all, this may have no interest whatsoever, and that's totally fine. So next weekend, I'm going to record a business course model that everybody can listen to. That way you'll kind of have an idea of what it's like inside the course. And then when someone wants to have a preview, I can send them back to here. So there's some selfishness reasons for me doing this, but if it's something you don't, and it's a habit to listen to Trapping Radio on Friday or Saturday, go back in our archives. I think now all together, between all the stuff that's on there, something like 400 and something podcasts, counting everything. So you can go back, pick you out one of your favorites and listen to it. If the idea of how to have an income stream without it making you go bankrupt doesn't appeal to you, because that's what we're going to be doing next week. So I just wanted to say that. The other thing is, guys, support the sponsors. It helps support Trapping Radio. It's very important to Trapping Radio, and you'll find out that just by supporting the guys that support us, you'll know you're dealing with some really good guys, some really good companies, whether that be F&T or Oki Cable and Trap or Wildlife Control Supplies or Dunlap Lures. You know right off the bat you're dealing with class. So, they actually help pay the bills around here. So if you would see them at a convention, let them know you appreciate them supporting Trapping Radio and all that type stuff. Don't forget about the Fur Brigade. That's it's $39. You sign up, you get more content on there than if you were to buy it straight out, actually about double. So you've already doubled your money with that. Plus you get 10% off of everything that I have. And there's other companies on there like Hilltop, and there's some from Southern Snares and different Expandapans. When Tim has knives, I could go on. But there's different discount programs in there that you'll get a code. So when you go to one of their websites, you put the code into the coupon code, and you'll get that discount. So not only do you get more content than you would if you were to just pay for it, you're also going to get discounts. And if you're like me or everybody else in this game, you can easily get your money back every single year by supporting the Brigade. So it's not like it's costing you $39. You're going to make money with the Trapping Radio Fur Brigade. So I just wanted to say that. It's been a kind of a crazy 3 or 4 days as far as this happens every year, and I'm not complaining and I'm not bragging, just letting you know what's kind of going on if you've ever decided you want to be in the business that I'm in. This is the time of year, especially with the price changes that are coming up, which is, just let me tell you, after the Nationals, everything I have is going to be more expensive. So if you're looking to get lure, go and get the savings before now instead of waiting and get it then. I mean, go and get the savings that way. But it's more this year, just because dealers, with me anyway, can buy at the now prices all the way up to the nationals. And I was kind of thrown into the price change because I haven't changed my prices in so long. And the squeeze was getting really, really tight on a lot of products. And then I realized, because I don't pay attention to what other people do. That's their own business. You know, I don't get into what people price or how they're doing their bottles, or that's just not my thing. I just stick with what I know, and I just constantly try to get customers what they want. So I'm not one of those that's always, well, he's got that, I gotta have this. I've never been into that. But the prices of the market have way outpriced what my prices are, and I should have went up 3-4 years ago, but didn't. So my prices are going up. Well, the bigger dealers realize if they buy stuff before the nationals, that they will get it at a cheaper price and sell it at a little higher price. So they're putting that in, which is just great business, by the way. I mean, it's great business. So now me and Travis have some orders that we're trying to make sure that we can have at conventions and stuff like that. So it's just been nothing but buttholes and elbows around here trying to get all this stuff inventoried and bottles ordered and stuff put in jars and aged and all that stuff that goes on in this. Oh my word, I will be looking forward to the nationals just to take a break, because it's going to be pretty crazy up till that point here, and that's pretty much what we're doing. I won't be doing any type of ADC work now till then, because there's just no way, and it would be a bad business move for me to do that. And then I can start playing around and have more fun after that. That's what's going on around here in the PCG world. I've got a couple of emails that we're going to cover. One's pretty quick, and it's just a question that someone asked that... Well, before I get into that, there's a gentleman that was asking questions about kill poles. Next week, my plan is, and I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but my plan is that I'm going to do an extremely slow, detailed video on how a kill pole is made, the way that I use it, my version, how it's designed, so you can make them up yourself or get someone to make them for you, and how you secure the snare to it, because this is a common question I get all the time. And I'll admit, guys, there's a lot of stuff like this. A kill pole's been part of my world for so long that when I'm talking about something like that, I just automatically assume, which makes an ass out of me, but I assume that it makes sense to everybody else, and obviously doesn't. Plus, I'm going to really SEO this YouTube video, so when I get these questions, I can just shoot the link over, then they can see exactly how to do it, because trying to type it out in words is really, really difficult. So if you watch my stuff on YouTube, which is Wolfer Nation, the channel, you'll be able to see that video. And if you've ever had really questions on exactly what it is, because I'm going to make sure that there's no questions whatsoever on how the kill pole works. Now, the first question is kind of, for a lot of people, it's kind of a simple question. And for some people, it's something they probably want to know. So, and it was an email sent to me. So instead of just writing down a quick, two-line thing, I thought I'd cover this really quick. But the main topic of the shows, guys, is going to be toys I have known. And not talking about the seedy little shops on the side of the interstate toys. I'm talking about toys and coyote trapping that I've known, and fox trapping for that matter. So that's what the main subject's going to be on, is going to be catching some coyotes. But the question was, what is something that can be used from the trapper's point of view for coon trailing scent? And I believe this was brought up from this question, which I don't have it open in front of me, but I believe it was based off of the Boars Gone Wild, which is Randy Smith catching hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of raccoons in the middle of winter in 2 foot of snow and ice in Pennsylvania. And he uses a trailing scent. And I'm going to explain what that trailing scent is, And then I'm going to explain some other ones that you can use. And just try these out. Kind of be creative about what you're doing. And see what works best for you. Now, what Randy was doing is he was taking Federales, the bait that I have. And then he will put in, you know, a couple of pints of that or a pint of that into a gallon. I don't know his exact formula. Just play around with it. You know, you may come up with a better way than what he's doing. He puts that bait in there and he lets it sit and it kind of tinctures out. And then he lets it sit for a couple of weeks and then he will strain the meat out so it's just the liquid, and the liquid is oil. Just vegetable oil, corn oil, peanut oil, don't make it complicated. And then he's got this oil that's not as strong as Federales, but it still smells like Federales. And when he goes up and he does his dog proof sets the way he's doing it, Boar's Gone Wild, he spreads this stuff all over the place and inside the trap. And if anybody's seen that video, it's obvious his system is super deadly. Now, he's using Federales. Does that mean that that's the only thing that that's going to work for? Absolutely not. Have I tried other stuff? Now, I've made this myself because it actually is pretty good. But I have not went out and tried different lures or baits or whatever. But you can, because oil is pretty cheap. And a pint of bait from somebody, even with the prices going up, is pretty freaking cheap for what you get. And what I would do is 1 pint to a half gallon. You could try a gallon, but unless you're dealing with something that's really, really strong, which may not be the best for raccoons, I'd say a half a gallon's probably a little bit better, you know, 2 pints. Because here's the deal. If you were to tincture Federales, strain the meat back out, you didn't kill the bait. Go use the bait. All you've done is stack the function of what that bait is. So you can get the tincture. It's gonna be a little less on the Federales that you go to use because you suck some of that odor out of it with the tincture of the oil. But then you can go use twice as much as a set. So it's not like you're wasting Federales. You can still go get your coyotes with it. So that's a pretty neat thing. You know, there's, I would say, you know, maybe that you could try some stuff like Powder River, Hiawatha Valley from Tim Caven up in Minnesota. There's just a lot of different baits that are on. I know some of the ones that Jeff has smells really good. You know, I don't use other people's stuff really, so I don't know the names of them. That, you know, me and him sitting there talking all the time, and I'm opening the lids and smelling them. He's got some really good smelling ones. Try some of his or Tim's or whoever it is. Bait that maybe he had on hand. Maybe it's something that didn't really work out that well for coyotes. We'll try to use it for a trailing scent for your coons. So you can tincture a bait to expand the volume, still get to use the bait, and go out and do it that way, which is, it's actually a pretty cool thing to do if you think about it. Now, some other things you can do, you know, the basic everyday thing is fish oil. If I was going to use fish oil for a raccoon bait, I would definitely probably put 1 ounce of shellfish in with Menhaden oil to do this. Because you don't know how old the Menhaden oil is when you get it, and it loses its flavor over time. And that shellfish just kind of protects it. You could do some type of crawfish, you could do lobster. I mean, there's all kind of stuff on the market, herring oil, but you want it to be strong, and about the strongest you're going to get is the synthetic shellfish, and it's going to mix with the oil, and that'll just give it a little bit more punch when it's out on the ground. Now, you can make your own fish oil for your own personal use. And I talk about this. This is one of the things in my lure and bait making DVD, and I'm going to go over this real quickly. Guys, I'm going to say the same thing to you that I said to them in the video. If you think that this is what you're going to do and go make a living making fish oils that you're selling at conventions, you are going to be out of business because you are going to have unhappy customers because you are trying to take advantage of something where you know it's not going to last. that is a crappy way to be a lure maker. So don't do this and try to sell it. Unless, I mean, I would go as far as they need to sign a sheet of paper saying it must be used in the next 3 months. Because they're not going to be happy. But for a couple of months, it's pretty slick and it's pretty easy to do. You can go catch you some fish, get you some tuna fish out of cans, get you some sardines, some herring, some mackerel if you're up in Maine, because those things are everywhere, or down in the Gulf. It doesn't really matter what it is. Put a couple of pints of that inside of a gallon jug, fill it up full of oil, vegetable oil is fine, and don't put it out in the sun, and just let it go. Now, you can leave it in there longer if it's cooked. If it's not cooked like raw fish, it's going to start to rot quicker, and it's dependent on where you want this thing to be is when you need to filter the fish out. But let's say that you can go get a bunch of sardines cheap at the dollar store. They're on sale and they're cheap anyway. So you get 5 or 6, 7 cans of that, and you put it in a gallon jug, you fill it up with oil. Every day, go and smell that. And in a couple of days, it's going to start really smelling like sardines. Now, somewhere over the next week or so, it's going to start smelling like the fresh sardines. It's going to start getting a little bit raunchier. That is when, right then, not 3 days from then, not the next day, but right then, that's when you'll need to get a little strainer and strain the fish out. And I would go as far as probably putting a half a cup of sodium benzonoid inside of that oil, just for anything that's still in there so it doesn't continue to decompose. And if you use that within a couple of months, that's a strong, clean, effective trailing scent for raccoon. But it's not going to last. So just be careful. Like I said, I just want to give that warning. There's a lot of people that are always trying to find ways to make money. This is not it, because you're going to have very unhappy customers. Because if they buy it now in June, it's going to be deader than a hammer and smell like nothing but rancid vegetable oil by the time they go to use it in November. And they're going to hold you responsible in their mind. They're going to tell their buddies, and you're going to get a bad reputation. It goes downhill from there. So don't do that. But that is one thing you can do for yourself. Just some oil and fish. When it gets to the flavor you want, drain the fish out. Throw a little sodium benzonoid in there. You can put it in the freezer if you got to leave it. If you're going to do it now and for November, you could put a couple of gallons of this in the freezer. It's not going to go away that way. Thaw it out and go use it. So that's one thing you can do. Now, I know a guy that had a habit of selling this at conventions. I'm not going to mention his names. Don't email me. Don't ask me at conventions, because I'm not going to tell you. And I thought it was a strange thing, but he actually sold quite a bit of it. And he would go to the dollar store and get the cheap pints of the artificial maple syrup. He'd put that in a bottle and double his money or something on there. And he swore him down how good it really was. And I could see a raccoon that would be interested in that. Now, syrup, when it gets really cold, you can imagine it's going to get harder to get out. The thing about that, just to keep in mind, you'll need to reuse it probably more than you would the fish oil or the shellfish, for the simple fact that it is a flavoring and not an oil. Those are two different, totally different things. You have, in the lure world, you got stuff that's distilled. You've got oils, and then you've got flavorings. The flavorings don't last that long out of the bottle. That's not what they're designed for. It's designed so when someone puts it on their pancakes, they smell a little bit of maple, and then it pretty much goes away. But you could mix something with that if you wanted to, some type of oil, whatever it is you wanted to use. Something like butterscotch, for an example. Shake it up. I don't know if it'll mix with it. It's just not something I've done. But I know that he really liked the cheap maple syrup, and he sold a bunch of it. So that's a cheap option for you, and you can always see if that works for you. I had another friend that liked using cheap barbecue sauce. it didn't do that much for me, but he actually caught quite a few coons using this as a trailing scent. A cheap barbecue sauce, you can catch it on sale. He'd buy it by the case. Just an idea to throw it out there for you. And now another thing that you could do if you want to play around with your own trailing scents is to make it yourself. You're not going to really know what's going to hit till you go out and test them. It's not something that I make, so it's not something that I can like have authority to tell you what's the best thing to do. If you're going to buy an essential oil from somebody, whether whoever that is, there's one question you have to know: is it oil based or is it water based? Because you can get cherries in flavorings, you can get them in water-based essential oils, or you can get them in oils. Well, they won't mix with water and only oil. You'll need to know that. So let's say you were going to use something like cherry or persimmon or mulberry or shellfish, whatever trips your trigger, whatever really seems to you like it's going to get a raccoon fired up. Get about a gallon, and if it's a water based, you can mix it with glycerin, and if it's oil based, just mix it with, because it's cheaper just to mix it with vegetable oil. Put about 4 ounces of that, except for a few things like shellfish oil, because it's really strong. Put about 4 ounces of that in a gallon jug, shake it up, let it sit there and marry is what I would call this. Keep shaking it up over a while. And then you can go back in a couple of weeks and see what it still smells like. Now, what I would do with this, just so you know what's going to be happening out on the line, is get some cardboard, put it somewhere that a cat or a dog or something's not going to get it. You can actually nail it to the side of an old tree or a building or whatever. Dip the cardboard down into this stuff, put it on the side of the tree or the building where it's at head height, so you don't have to do a lot to see. The next day, go see if you can smell it. The next day, go see if you can smell it. The next day, go see if you can smell it. And what you're looking for is, so you know, since you're making this up, do you need to re-lure it after 1 day, 5 days, 10 days, whatever it is. When it starts getting hard for you to smell it on the cardboard, that's your time period. And there's a lot of essential oils that are more volatile that will only last on the cardboard maybe 48 hours. So you'll know in your head, if you're gonna use this, every 48 hours you need to refreshen up your trailing scent. Now I know that's probably a lot more complicated than the gentleman was probably asking, but you know, that's what we try to do around here, is get information out so people can use it. You know, just try some different things. You know, you'll be amazed sometimes what raccoons like. You'd be surprised what some things a lot of animals will like. But you got to go try it. And if it actually works very well, guys, it's not going to be online. It's not going to be in a formula spreadsheet from somebody from a forum somewhere. It's not going to be in somebody's lure making book. It's not going to be the top tier of anything. Because if it is top tier, it's valuable. So if you're going to do this, go out yourself and do put your own sweat equity into it and see what you like and see what the critters like. Because you might find out the critters like stuff that you don't find as important. Now, that's trailing scent for raccoon. You know, we're already, 20 minutes into this, and we've been just talking about trailing scent for raccoon. Most people don't put thought into stuff like that. But I promise you, if your reputation was on the line, or it's going to be, you need to think of stuff like that. And you want to have something, and I understand with raccoons, you want to have something that's cheap, you want to have something that's plentiful, and you want to have something that's easy to use. And everything we talked about today would be pretty easy to use. You know, and what's a gallon of oil now? $8, 4 ounces of lure, even if, say, if it's $5 a piece, 20, so $31, $32, you'll have a gallon of this. That's pretty reasonable. And you didn't have to pay shipping probably on everything. So that would be my advice if that's something that you're looking into doing. Now the other one is from CJ. Now CJ's the gentleman that about gave me a heart attack when he told me my Wolfer Nation was gone. So thank you. In a sarcastic way I say that, and in a true, honest thank you way I'm saying that. It is, I might not have known it for 4 or 5 days. You know, it took a couple of days to get it straightened out. So I appreciate you letting me know. But he did ask a question, which led me down to, this could be an interesting topic for Trapping Radio. So I thought that's what we're going to do for the show. And it's toys that I have known. Now, as most everybody knows, you got three basic sets when it comes to canines and predators. You got dirt holes, which is a hole. You got flat sets, which there's no hole. And then you got blind sets, and there's no holes nor lure bait applied or urine or glands or anything like that. And it's just in the trail. Everything that you see with every other set falls into one of those. A buried bait set, still a flat set. There's no hole. So you can break these down. Toys, for the most part, fall in line better with flat sets. And the question that CJ asked was about the staked hide set. I've used these off and on, depending on if it's just something I think about or pre-plan for. They're actually pretty efficient. They're pretty much rainproof. It is for a flat set. It is. There's a couple of ways that you can do this, which we're getting ready to get into. But it's a simple premise. Let's say that you catch a beaver, or you get a gray fox, and it gets attacked by coyotes, and there's just not enough there that makes it worthwhile to try to skin and put it up because of damage, or you come across an otter that's been road killed on the side of the road, or you come across, I wouldn't use something like rabbit because it get tore real good, or deer hide. You shoot a deer, you cut all the strips up, and you put them in like 2 inches by 2 inch sections, and you cut all those up, and then you salt them if you're going to have any of the meat on there, or you can use them that way as long as they're straight out of the freezer. But basically all this is a 1 inch by 1 inch, or 2 inch by 2 inch, or 2 inch by 3 inch, whatever size that you want to have. It's just a cut piece of hide. It's nothing more than that. And then you'll probably need to punch a hole with a knife. And what most people do with that is they will stake it with some type of nail or wooden stake or something like that. But a nail works pretty good, like a gutter nail, because it has the head on top. And a gutter nail that's, 12, 14 inches long, when you actually tap that into the ground, most animals will have to come back 2 or 3 times to get it out of the ground. But all it is a piece of hide with some form of a pinning device that's down through the middle somewhere, and you put the nail through there, and then you find your flat set location, and like at the base of a stump, or at the base of a high bank, or at the base of a big grass clump, or some cactus, or whatever it is in your area, or right up against the edge of some primrose, and some type of bramble that nothing's going to want to try to go through. Any of that's pretty much interchangeable. How the set works is like any other flat set. So if I was going to go up to a grass clump, the first things that I need to think about, and I'm gonna walk you through what's going on through my little pea brain when I'm going up to a set. If I see a place that I think is a good place to do a set, one, I want to have it, probably within 5 or 6 feet at the most of a travel way of a coyote, a fox, or a cat. I want it on location. I'm gonna try to figure out what is the prevailing winds here, or if I know I've got like a 5 or 6 day big storm coming in and it's going to switch the wind, I may change how I'm putting the set. But I'm going to try to play the wind the best that I can, nothing's 100% in nature. I'm going to look for something that stands out, or I can control the coyote where he puts his foot because of the terrain or the vegetation or something like that. That's kind of the first things that's going through my mind. Then then I'm going to look at, is there somewhere that's a little bit higher ground than somewhere else inside of this, you know, tiny location area? Because if we're looking at a grass clump and it's right next to a trail, but then they've kind of kicked up the dirt with a road grader over the years and it's 4 or 5 inches taller, that's going to change where I'm going to put my trap for this particular set. Or it could change if I'm going to use two traps at this set. So I'm looking at high ground and low ground. I'm always thinking about weather, trying to keep the trap where it's not going to be in a swimming pool situation, so it can keep working. The beauty of the staked hide set, though, is it can, most of the time, unless you use something that's really weird, it can get rained on for 3 days straight and it's still going to keep kicking, because it's really hard for anything to get washed out of a piece of hide when you do this. So I'm also going to be looking at, guys, and all this is going through my head really quick. It doesn't take me as long to think about all this, but I just want to walk you through what I'm thinking about when I go to do this. The next thing I'm going to look at is, how close is the trap set to the travel way? The further away from the travel way that the trap set is at, the closer to the front of the trap set is the actual trap going to be placed. If it's right up next to the travel way, it's going to probably be more straight out to the side. Because when an animal comes up, if there's not something weird phobic going on, and most time with flat sets it's not as bad, if the trap set is right on the side of the trail, he's just going to keep walking his normal route, which is not out in front of the trap, you know, 10 or 12 inches. It's just in a straight line. So think about this. Draw a straight line in your head and put a grass clump that's like 6 inches away from it in your mind. If you bring that trap out front, most of the time the coyotes or fox are just going to walk between the trap and the backing. But if with that line right there, with that backing being 6 inches away from the side of the trail, for instance, I'm going to move that trap out probably about 8 or 10, 12 inches where it's in line with the way the animal's walking. So it's not going to be really be on a 45. It's going to be just to the front, but straight out to the side. And I'm going to choose the side where the wind's going to be blowing kind of that way. That's what I'm thinking about. Now, the farther back I take my flat set, the closer to the front of what we would consider the front of a set does the trap go. So if there's a travel way, like a two-track road, and it's kind of got some grass and stuff, then all of a sudden there's one tuft that kind of stands out, and it's got decent dirt to work with, and it's not going to be filling up with water, but it's 6 foot away, my trap is going to be pretty much close to dead center of what I would consider, or a human would consider, the front of the set. Because if the animal comes up and swings up to it, now he's heading straight towards the backing. When he gets up in there, now his feet's in front of the set. If he's coming from the side because it's real close to the travel way, he's not in front of the set, he's to the side of the set. And there's no hard and set rules here, but if the trap set's going to be 2 foot off, I'll probably have the trap at about a 45 degree angle. If it's a little bit further back, it'll swing a little bit towards the center. So those are the type things I'm doing. So I all this runs through my head. I pick the place that I want to have. And if I'm just gonna do one trap at this set, I'm gonna choose it off of how far it is off of the location of the travel way. Right in front of the grass clump, I mean right up against it where it's almost, you're going to be pushing some grass into it a little bit, I'm going to grab my piece of hide that's got the nail running down through it, and I'm going to pin that, just hammer it right in the ground right then. That's all this set is. It's super simple. Part of the reason it works. there's nothing there that's going to freak a coyote out. He's seen fur, you know, spread out all through its life. There's nothing there that's going to spook a coyote at all. But there is two ways to handle the luring process of a staked hide. I like the soak method, but you don't have to do that. You can do a standard method. So you've got all your, say like you're going out in the middle of the beginning of the day and you've got 24 pieces of hide with the nails going through there and they're like in a container. So you can keep up with it, or a box or something like that. So you get out of the truck, you're going to put in two of these sets, you grab two of the stakes, pick your location, you put your hide right up close to whatever you're going to be using. I wouldn't do this set just out in the great wide open, because there's no way to help you control where a coyote goes. And what you're considering the front and him considering the front is probably going to be two different things, and you'll get a lot of dismisses out of set by doing this. But if you do a standard way, after you tap that thing in the ground, just smear some lure or some bait on top of the hide. If you know rain's coming in, kind of get a stick and peel up one of the corners and smear a little bit on the bottom. Let it flop back over, bed your trap, blend it in, you're good to go. That's how that works. Now, what I like to do with these, because I can reuse them over and over and over again, I think I get a little bit better usage out of the lure or the bait that I'm going to be using, is I will water down the lure a little bit. Now, depending on what the lure is, you'll have to do a little bit of experimenting. Most lures that are sold in the trapping industry can be cut with glycerin. Do not use glycol to save two pennies. Glycerin, good. Glycol, sucks. Don't use it. It's antifreeze. That's what it's for. I don't know why people think they should be using that stuff in lures. It changes the chemical makeup by breaking it down with the alcohol if you use glycol. So let's say you're going to use something like Boss Dog. If I'm going to be using hide stakes, I'd take a bottle of Boss Dog, which is 4 ounces, and I would mix another 8 ounces of glycerin and just stir it up and stir it up and stir it up. And it's going to make this ugly looking slurry, because you're going to have little meats and stuff like that floating around there, but you're going to make this little slurry in a Tupperware bowl or something like that, or an old used bait can, something. And then what I do is I put the nails through the hides, and I just soak those pieces of hide in that diluted lure. You can do the same thing with a bait. And I just let them soak there overnight. That permeates every single cell of that hide if you do this. And then you take them out, you kind of like get the big chunks of the stuff off of there, and then you can put them in a bag, or you can put them in a, you know, like a taller container where you can have the ends down, where you can just grab the nail, flip it over, nail it in the ground. That way I don't have to deal with the lure when I'm out on the line. But I like how it permeates every single fiber of that hide. You can do the same thing with T-bones, guys. It completely permeates it. And I don't care if you get 14 inches of rain, it's still going to be working because it's on top of the ground. A lot of ingredients that are in lure, like skunk, when moisture hits it, it gets stronger. That's why when your dog gets sprayed and you think you got it taken care of, and then it rains and it stinks to high heaven again, it's because the way those molecules work with the water. So if you pre-soak these little pieces of hide, now you've got something that you may not have to re-lure that. You can catch 15, 20 coyotes off one piece of hide if you can still find it. After, you know, if you're using drags, it's easier, but if you're staking, that's going to be more difficult. That's really all that set is. Just stake the hide in front of something and put a trap in front of it. I know that sounds really simplistic, and it really is, but it's very effective. It's like I said, the one of the amazing parts of it is how weatherproof it is. Snow, you soak those things, a coyote is going to be able to smell that through. If you've got any type of decent lure, I don't care if it's 3 foot of snow, he's going to know it's down there. He may decide not to go after it. He's going to know it's down there under the snow. So that's what that set is. What are some of the other toys that I played around with that I really liked? I've used a lot of skulls, you know, and I've talked about this in the past. When I do a skull, I don't want to set it on the ground. I want to countersink it and give it kind of a peekaboo looking thing for the coyote so it didn't seem like an alien put it there, but just like another animal kind of dug it up. Now the coyote's going, I wonder if there's any meat left on that thing, or I'm going to go pee on it, or whatever. I want to kind of hide it. That's the generic way of doing a skull. Now this is a fun way of doing a skull. If you skin raccoons, I love bobcats for this if you don't have a skull market. Coyotes do very well, fox do very well, otters do very well, beaver do very well with this, and it's a very crude way to make a set, but it's also extremely effective. And it's a toy, basically is what it is. It's the reason I'm saying it's a toy. When you skin a bobcat or a beaver, for instance, and you've peeled the hide off of that thing, you've got the skull, and it's got the meat and the eyeballs and the tongue and stuff like that in there. Now you can take one of them big gutter nails and use it just like the staked hide set. Drive some rebar down through it, but you gotta pin it, and you just can't sit it there, it's gonna be stolen. Pin it to the ground. A lot of times I will cut stakes, or I will get some form picket stakes like you see in construction, you know, the 1 by 1.5, and I'll take a bobcat skull or beaver skull or something like that, and I'll wire that thing through there, through the jaws, wrap it around 5 or 6 times with a wire and get it really tight. Now what I'm doing with this is I will find a good thing of grass or a big thing of weed or in some blackberry bushes or something where it's really thick, and I'll kind of like try to figure out, you know, a coyote's coming down through here, he'll be able to see this because it's just a little more open than everything else, and I will beat that thing in the ground, and then I will halfway cover it so there's like half the nose, one side of the eyes, a little bit of the tongue hanging out, and I smear some lure inside the mouth cavity. It is a eye-catching type set. It will freak somebody out that comes across it because it looks like something out of a horror movie. I mean, it reminds me of that old thing. What was that show where they used to show everything getting killed and then they eat the monkeys alive by eating their brains while they're still screaming? It's kind of disturbing in that fact, but it's a natural thing for an animal. And it's got the smells, it's got the brain, which is high in amino acids, it's got the tongue, and it's got the lure that you smeared in its mouth. It's nothing but a toy. It's a really simple thing to do. We've talked about grab and die sticks. Just a quick rundown on that. You use this basically the same way you would the hide set. Get a piece of dowel, go find a piece of soaker hose that you can barely shove over it. Cut the dowel to where it's about, you know, 10 inches long, then cut you an inch of the soaker hose. Hot glue that thing as you stick it on there, and you can smear lure into that soaker hose, and it does what it's supposed to and it soaks into it. It's a little different than rubber. And then you can just tap that in front of the grass clipping or the grass clump, set your trap, and go about your business after you blend it in. There was a thing that I used to sell, and I think some people still sell it. They're called egg stakes, and there's probably some other names for them. They're basically round balls that are wood that you can get from Hobby Lobby. You can drill holes in them, and then you take a piece of dowel and you hot glue it in the bottom, and you don't put the dowel all the way through, but you leave like half of the space of after you drill through it where you put the dowel up. So you got this little bitty cup that goes into this. It's about a 1-inch wooden ball. And you can paint them white, you can play with different colors, and then you can just put your lure down in that little bitty cup, because that's where you drill the hole so the dowel can go through there, and just go shove it in front of something, put a trap in front of it. That's definitely an effective thing. Now, I've played around with the film canisters. That's not something that you can really get any more that I know of, because who in the world uses film? But if you got a bunch of them, put some cotton in that thing with your lure and shove it in the ground if it's soft, or kind of do a wobble hole and shovel it down. You know, technically it's a dirt hole, maybe. It's kind of one of those things. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it definitely worked. Pete Askins, that used to be one of his main sets. That's what he taught us at the trapping college, was the canisters. I've seen where people have taken little pieces of PVC. Zagger does this, and he catches a bunch of coyotes, and you can go back and listen to the podcast with Zagger, and he gets into this more detail. It's basically just a toy. This piece of PVC with some cotton run down in there, put your lure bait down in there and shove it in front of something. And then you put a trap, bed it, and you go about your business. The toys speed it up, guys. That's the most important part of this. A coyote trapper especially. If you've got a coyote trapper that's a flat set guy, and a coyote trapper that's only putting in great big holes, unless he's got something like a big auger, the flat set guy is going to be able to put in more sets. And the flat set will catch more pups than adults, and the dirt hole catches more pups. The energy difference between putting those two types of set in is a lot. Because if you were to add up the energy, if you could find a way to audit that energy and audit that time, if it takes an extra minute and a half per set over the course of 5 months of trapping, the flat set guy gets like an extra probably 5 days a season. And he's not as tired as the guy digging a hole. If you're in hard ground, these things become even better, because who wants to dig in hard ground? You know, you want to work hard, but you don't want to be like brain dead work hard. If you're in really hard ground, don't dig holes. I've talked about using the portable pockets. I've got a whole podcast on that. That's nothing but a toy. It's just a more complicated, complex toy, because it's a stake and it has a lot of different ways that you can present it. But all it is a toy for trapping for an animal. One of my favorites is a turtle shell. When I find them, you would have thought that I had found a $100 bill. I mean, like, I pick them up in both hands. I can hear the angels singing up in the clouds when I find these things. Little box turtle shells or something, you know, got it, or some little snapping turtle shells, or some red or yellow slider turtle shells, stuff like that. Those are fantastic coyote toys. And fox, for that matter. Treat them with the greatest respect that they deserve. Because a turtle shell, especially if you're using drags, I've got some that I have used probably for 5 or 6 seasons. I don't have to put lure in anymore. Soaks all into that the cartilage and the bone of the shell. Oh, it's just got it's an amazing, amazing flavor that comes out of there. It can be seen. It's natural. Canines and everything knows that a turtle is edible. It's just a beautiful thing. But you have to stake it. There again comes get some 3/8 inch rebar, with a head on the end, or with a T-bar, or some gutter nails. Drive it right down through the middle. Put your lure and bait inside. It's very waterproof. And it's of all the sets that I do, that's probably, I expect to see something when I use that on a good location. And all it is a toy. Now, if you go out or you know somebody that turtle traps and they get a lot of sliders and they're not destroying the shells, or you come across a bunch of them for whatever reason, store them bad boys up. Use them, and you will be so glad that you did. I have in the past, and I still have some, but over the years they got messed up. When I used to go to the hill country of Texas, which is not really South Texas. The hill country is kind of mountainous. Sometimes it's a 1,000-foot drop in elevation really quick. There's big valleys, tall. That's like the exotic capital of Texas. And by exotic, I mean kudus and crazy ram sheep and wildebeest and all kinds of aldads and these crazy animals from Africa. That's like the capital. And when you're trapping on these things, just from stuff dying or stuff getting killed and the hunters not wanting the heads or whatever, I used to come across all kind of ram horns and black buck horns. Now these are horns, these are not antlers. These are hollow. So when they fall off the animal, they're completely hollow. It's not like a deer antler where it's solid calcium. These are horns. And I will take wire and I will wire it around the middle of that and stake it down, you know, in the grass clump, cover a lot of it up, and animals go gaga over it. But it's super fast to put in. Everything I can do to save energy is a win. Anything that I have to do above what I need to do to catch the coyote is waste. Waste not, want not. We've heard that our whole life. So if you spend more energy at a set than necessary, whatever that is, just keep, think of it this way. You're wasting your time and energy. The customer of the coyote does not care that you primped on this set for 20 extra minutes. I've used chewing tobacco cans, kind of like the film canisters. Pop some holes, fill it full of bait, put it down in a dirt hole, stake it under some cactus, put it in a grass clump. The tobacco didn't seem to matter everything. I've had some people that's given me, I don't really use medicine that much, but people apparently have, like, they use a lot. And they save their medicine bottles, and they're, you know, they can be little jars or they can be bottles, and they use them like film canisters. And you can just wobble you out a hole and put your lure and stuff. You can pre-bait and lure, which is pretty handy, if you've got a lid for it. So then you like shove it down in the hole with a rebar, like a little wobble thing. Unscrew the top, blend the set in, you're good to go. T-bones, toy. Make them look natural, make them look like they've been discovered. One of the things that I like doing around gray fox, or if I'm in a lot of cover, is and I've got beaver tails and I don't have a market for the tails, and I've already saved enough of those for bone broth, or I've saved enough where I'm making beaver tail oil that I use in some of my stuff, I will keep those beaver tails and I will staple that or nail that to a tree about 6-8 inches off the ground. The whole tail with the fur part is facing down. That oil during the day and heating up and stuff will start to dribble out. That's not a bad attractant of it to itself. You can add lure on the back side of the tail up against the tree to give it a little more oomph. When you nail, especially with a bigger headed nail, when you nail that into the side of a tree, a coyote's got to work on that thing a long time. I've had some of the pesky little gray fox that's kept doing everything they weren't supposed to do when I'm trying to catch them. You nail a beaver tail to a tree and it finds it, it'll fight on that thing forever till it gets in the trap. You know, that's a pretty easy way to get a kid started trapping, because you can catch coyotes, raccoons, fox, bobcats. You can. It's amazing what you can catch with something that simple. Now that seems very crude. But if it works, who cares how crude it is? That's a beaver tail. Now the last toy I'm going to talk about is coyote, bobcat, and fox feet. Big habit of when I'm skinning those, I cut the feet off. I can pin those with some wire and a stake for a flat set just by themselves. Pretty decent set. a lot of times what I'll do with that though is at dirt holes is after I put the bait and lure in, I'll just throw one of those in there. It's side appeal, it's a different odor appeal, it's a curiosity type thing, it's a toy. Don't want to do any of these toys that we've talked about, guys, set after set after set after set. That's not what you want to do. You want to mix them up. That's why having some toys is a pretty good deal. Because sometimes it gets hard to keep mixing things up. Well, if you've got four turtle shells and four grab and die sticks and some ram antlers and some, you know, black buck antler, then you've got some coyote feet and you got some beaver tails, and you're going to be putting in some dirt holes and some regular flat sets and some dropping flat sets and some T-bones, and you're trapping an area, you got a lot of variety going on. And a lot of times with coyotes, that's the difference between catching a lot and catching a little. So that's toys. Just toys that I've used, toys that I've liked, toys that have worked. Mostly for coyotes, some for fox, some for cats, mostly for coyotes though. You know, sometimes variety is the spice of life when you're dealing with coyotes. They cover a lot of ground. They're not always interested in the same thing over and over again. It's just a cool way to stay ahead of the curve on the coyote getting used to what you're thinking about. Now, the last thing I want to talk about, I'm probably getting this dude's name wrong. If you've ever watched Fox News in the morning, he's on there all the time. I think his name's Gambino. And he's got a podcast, and I think it's called The Gambino Show. And he's an ex-Secret Service guy. He's been a policeman. He does a lot of political stuff now, but he's got a podcast. Now, I listen to him sometimes if there's nothing else really. It's not like I enjoy Rogan's podcast because, you're going to be talking about you're going to hear people talk about psychedelics one day, then it's political, then it's music, then it's jiu-jitsu, and then it's, is the Big Bang Theory correct? And, I mean, you had no idea with Joe Rogan what he's going to be talking about. It's normally interesting because he's a curious guy. The Gambino guy is strictly politics, and he's strictly team Republican, team conservative. That gets boring after a while, but every now and then I listen to him. And he explained something the other day that I thought you as a trapper need to just keep in the back of your mind. Now, we all know with all the craziness going on with Mueller right now and they got this special prosecutor that's trying to come up and say that somehow Trump was colluding with the Russians, and that's went on for several months. Then a couple of weeks ago, it became clear that the FBI had a CIA agent try to basically be a spy and go into the Trump campaign and get information. And that was kind of the Republicans' way of saying it. And of course the Democrats are saying that he was just asking questions. But they're, after listening to this Gambino guy talk about push and pull, and that's what I want to talk about real quickly, because I think it's important for us all to keep in our mind. This is the technique of law enforcement. Push and pull. It's common. It's taught. It's used all the time. Wildlife officers also use this. So let's say that TWRA or I don't know, whatever, I think Alabama's got DNR, and I'm not sure what Mississippi has as far as what they call their wildlife officers. But let's say, because me, Chip, and Tim are going down and we do our annual hunts like we do, and they think that we're doing something wrong, which we're not, but they think that we are. Or someone in that organization's got a hard on because they're an anti and they're going to try to make an example out of us. Don't think it couldn't happen. The push. this is what has got the FBI in such of a... They're so upset about the word spy being used because of the push and the pull. The push is you send somebody into a group and you have them bring up a subject that if later you need to pull that information out of that group, you automatically have a charge of conspiracy. So I'm going to use me, Tim, and Chip for an example. Me, Chip, and Tim, we're going hunting, wherever that's at. We're hunting together. And all of a sudden, we meet somebody online or a local guy. He seems like a really cool guy. And he shows up and he's super friendly and he's showing us where to hunt. And he just seems like, you know, an awesome, awesome guy. And somewhere after a couple of days, he kind of makes a comment of something like, you know, every time I come through that gate up there about 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, there's a couple of huge bucks or huge does up there. You know, we could just sneak up there one night. Everybody's asleep. We could pop us a couple and have us camp meet. Now, me, Chip, or Tim go, yeah, that'd be kind of cool, but I don't think so. Or, you know, well, if we get starving death bad enough, we make a bad joke about it or something, but yeah, that's not what we're not into the poaching thing or whatever. Any type of comment that me, Chip, or Tim is in the positive for the push. Now, see, the push is him bringing up poaching the deer or running traps a day later than the trap check, or running a piece of equipment that's not legal in that state. And there's a positive comment just made out of jest or off the collar, not really serious, it doesn't matter. See, that's the push. And then whatever this organization is that's trying to make an example out of me, Chip, or Tim, they can't get us on anything because we're not doing anything. They already have us. We've already broken the law according to the courts. Because now comes the pull. Their informant, just like the guy that was trying to get into the Trump campaign, the informant gets busted. Of course, it's all a show. What did y'all talk about? Yeah, we talked about this, and this, and you know, one night we were kind of talking about if we should go poach these deers up there. Conspiracy has already been set in place. That's the pull. You push the conviction. You push... See, what's the right way of saying this? You're pushing the paradigm into this situation, and then when you feel it necessary, it's like the ultimate trump card, because you can now pull that back out of it. And as in the court, well, I don't know if they really committed, you know, I don't know if they really post or anything, but you know, it was talked about on the 23rd at 7:30 at night, and lo and behold, my phone was on part of it. Do you want to hear it? And just an off comment from me, Chip, or Tim, we're through. In the eyes of the law. The reason I'm telling you this is because this is what the Gambino guy thought was happening with Trump. They were trying to put in a push just to say, you know, just like somewhere in one of these meetings somewhere, well, wouldn't it be nice if the Russians, you know, could give us some stuff? Yeah, that'd be really cool. Then they pull it back out of that through the informant, and now it's conspiracy. Because it's a eyewitness account, even though it's their guy, it's an eyewitness account of them committing conspiracy to collude against Russia. Guys, that can happen to any of us with our hunting, fishing, or trapping. Just joking around sometimes, just saying some certain things that are very off color on Facebook, you need to be really careful. Because you never know, especially with social media, you never know if you have a group of guys show up and you don't know everybody, never know if there's a push happening. Because someone that's good at doing the push, you would never know it. And this, all of a sudden, there's charges of conspiracy. Because that's the catch-all, how you get people caught. You know, that's how they had to do a lot of gangsters back in the day, was conspiracy. So just think about that when you're making certain comments with people you don't know. And I mean know well. Because guys love to just cut up and have some crazy humor sometimes and joke about things that they would never do. But if there's a push going on, that can have some serious consequences. So just keep that in mind when you're saying things, or people, you feel like someone's kind of pushing you to do something that you probably don't feel comfortable. You meet somebody and they're always talking about, you'd catch more fur if you could run an extra day, don't you think that's right? And we go trapping, we don't have to check these today, we'll check those tomorrow. Just keep in mind, if you remember back to some of the stuff I read from Boddicker, even back in the 70s, a lot of the game and fish people were determined that trapping was bad and they were going to stop it. And there's a lot of good game wardens in this country, and there's a lot of game wardens that are antis. Just be aware of what a push and a pull is. Plus, it's kind of interesting when you look at it from a political point of view, because that makes a lot of sense. Because the Democrats were scared to death of the word spy, because it could easily be brought up, which it never was on the mainstream media explaining a push and a pull. But when the Gambino guy, which was law enforcement and Secret Service, explained several different ways that that's been used to get convictions of people when they didn't have other things, or they used that to get a warrant, it was amazing how powerful the push and pull was. All right, guys, go out and have some fun. Remember, trapping season's coming up. Convention seasons are coming up. I hope to see a lot of y'all up here in Wisconsin. And I will talk to y'all next week when we're going to talk about cash flows with a trapping business and other businesses, how you don't go broke even though you can sell something for more than you got in it. So, see y'all then. Y'all have fun.